we take our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Attorney General William Barr testified about his handling of the Mueller report in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee today. President Trump is suing two banks to block the release of his financial records. And the president and Democratic leaders say they're willing to work together in shaping a $2 trillion infrastructure package. Our question for you this week, are you happy to hear the president and Congress talking about infrastructure? Where do you want to see the focus go as an infrastructure plan takes shape? Building new roads? Fixing the ones you already have? How are we going to pay for it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill. Scott, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back with you.
Well, we know that after Attorney General Barr released his four-page statement on the Russia probe, Special Counsel Robert Mueller wrote Barr saying he was disappointed in the summary. Barr called Mueller on the phone. Here he is today describing that conversation.
And I asked him if he was suggesting that the March 24th letter was inaccurate. And he said no, but that the press reporting had been inaccurate and that the press was reading too much into it. And I asked him, you know, specifically what his concern was. And he said that his concern focused on his explanation of why he did not reach a conclusion on obstruction.
And Scott, this letter, which is out now from Robert Mueller or his team, that got a lot of attention today, right?
That's right. The letter from Robert Mueller to Bill Barr was really at the crux of this hearing today before the Senate Judiciary. You know, we can go to Robert Mueller's own words because we now have this two-page letter from Robert Mueller. He says in the letter that Bill Barr's summary from March did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of Robert Mueller's work and conclusion, specifically having to do with his analysis of whether President Trump committed obstruction of justice. And so, you know, you have these two different characteristics of the conversation between Robert Mueller and Bill Barr, but we really can go to Robert Mueller's own words in this letter, and I think that's what Democrats were really keying in on. Of course, Democrats, you know, they are now calling for Bill Barr to resign. They say that he has misled the American public. He has misled the Congress in terms of trying to cover for the president in regards to the Mueller report. And so these are serious allegations. And it was a pretty combative four-hour grilling that we saw today on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, we heard the attorney general refer to that letter as snitty, I think was the word he used, and he speculated that it might have been written not by Robert Mueller, but by a staffer. Are people on Senate Judiciary or other congressional committees trying to get Robert Mueller himself to come forward and testify?
Well, certainly Democrats would love to hear from Bob Mueller to sort of clear up some of this confusion. But the Senate Judiciary Chairman, Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, a close ally of the president, has said this investigation is over. He has heard enough. He heard enough from Bill Barr today. And as far as he's concerned, the committee does not need to look into this matter any further. Now, on the other side of the Capitol, tomorrow, House Democrats, the House Judiciary Committee is supposed to have Attorney General Bill Barr before them to testify before the House. Right now, it is unclear. There's a dispute over sort of the parameters of the questioning, whether staff members would be allowed to question the Attorney General, which is somewhat rare. And so they are quarreling over that fact. And we're not sure at this very moment whether the Attorney General will come before the Democratic-led committee in the House.
So a big overall concern is the question of whether Attorney General Barr misled and I guess deliberately misled Congress and the public in that four-page memo versus what's actually in the Mueller report. Is that a fair assessment of what has people, Democrats in particular, concerned?
Right. I mean, Democrats, including most of the 2020 presidential field, Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, some of those folks who were among the questioners today in the Senate Judiciary Committee, they really feel that Bill Barr has mischaracterized the Mueller report, not only at his press conference, but also in testimony before the committee. And so that is really why senators and especially Democrats want to hear from Robert Mueller himself so they can hear in his own words exactly, why he made certain conclusions and what he found in the investigation specifically related to obstruction of justice.
We're talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at the top stories in national politics. Another big story with a big price tag, Scott. Democratic leaders met with the president yesterday to talk about infrastructure. They came out with a tentative agreement on the basics. Here's a listen to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer after that meeting.
We agreed on a number, which was very, very good, $2 trillion for infrastructure. Originally, we had started a little lower. Even the president was eager to push it up to $2 trillion.
So infrastructure, ever since President Trump came into office and since Democrats took over in the House now, people have pointed to that as an issue that there could be bipartisan cooperation on. Is this plan that, or is this so vague that we just can't tell what's coming out of it yet?
Well, it was a bit of a surprise that they did come to an agreement on that specific number, $2 trillion. A lot of Republicans had wanted a smaller number, not so much federal spending. Democrats have been trying to push that number higher. $2 trillion is in the range that Nancy Pelosi has laid out in the past. And so that was quite a bit of a surprise, especially as we get more and more into this 2020 election season where people don't see much hope for legislating. But, of course, the devil is in the details. That's what we heard over and over from both Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill who say, how will the Congress, how will Washington pay for this $2 trillion plan? So Trump and the Democratic leaders will be meeting again in 3 weeks. What Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have said to the president is, we want you to lead on this issue. Now that we've agreed on a number, we want you to come up for the pay fors. And that is really going to be the challenge at this point is, how do you come up with that money without going into more debt?
Now, that $2 trillion, do we know the time frame of that? Is that $2 trillion in 2 years or $2 trillion in 20 years? The math comes out real different depending on the answer to that.
Yeah, it's $2 trillion over 10 years. At least that's sort of the parameters of this discussion now. So one of the possibilities that the president actually supports, not so popular in his own party, but he supports raising or doubling the federal gas tax, which has not been raised since Bill Clinton was president. And so that is causing a little bit of heartburn in the Republican Party. There are some Democrats who are for raising the gas tax. Of course, that doesn't get you to $2 trillion. So I think it's really going to have to be a combination of a lot of different things in order to get to that number.
What have we heard since that meeting from key, especially Senate Republicans on this?
Senate Republicans are not so hot on tackling infrastructure. I think they agree on the idea that our roads and our bridges are aging and dilapidated and need repairs. But there is not the appetite, especially from the Republicans who control the upper chamber. There's not the appetite to spend. Of course, the Democratic approach would be to add taxes in order to pay for new and aging infrastructure. And so right now, in the middle of an election season, especially in these sort of times and these politics, the Republican Party is not too keen on boosting taxes.
We continue our conversation with Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill, looking at some of the big stories in national politics. Scott, we've got this presidential campaign going on. Former Vice President Joe Biden is now in it. And you wrote a piece about how he and other Democratic candidates are trying to appeal to African-American voters looking ahead to primary season. What are you seeing out there?
Well, exactly. Vice President Biden has been reaching out to congressional Black caucus members on Capitol Hill, trying to win their endorsements. Of course, the challenge is that they also have some loyalties to their fellow CBC members, Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, who frequently show up to their meetings, two prominent African-American candidates and senators. And so the reason why I think there's this focus on the African-American vote is because the third major state in the primary contest is South Carolina, which in the Democratic Party is comprised of mainly African-Americans. And then a lot of the primary calendar turns to the South, places like Alabama and Mississippi and Texas, where there is substantial African-American population in some of these places. And so, you know, we frequently hear a lot of time and focus and attention spent on Iowa and New Hampshire. But once those primaries and caucuses are wrapped up, the attention really does shift to the South.
Now, Biden and other Democratic candidates are looking to lock up key endorsements, as you mentioned. Are we seeing a lot of people looking to endorse this soon, given that we're closing in on 24 candidates? Who knows how many there'll be by Election Day, by the time the campaign starts for real?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you're seeing a lot of, I think the approach from a lot of these lawmakers is, you either want to be the opening pitcher, the starting pitcher, or the closer. And so people jump in early, sort of betting on a horse early. We saw that with the former CBC chairman, Cedric Richmond of Louisiana, who I spoke to for my piece. He endorsed Biden early. He's been one of the folks trying to lure Biden and get him into the race, which he was successful in doing. And other folks, I think, wait until the nomination contest is well on its way, the primary contest, when candidates start to drop out and there's a clearer idea of who is going to be the nominee, like we saw in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. And so I think there's those two approaches. And right now we are seeing sort of the first wave of lawmakers and other politicians endorsing presidential candidates.
Are other candidates actively competing with Joe Biden for these votes, these African-American votes in places like South Carolina and some of those southern Super Tuesday states?
We have not seen too many endorsements. They are. I mean, the candidates are spending a significant amount of time in places like South Carolina. I think all of the major presidential candidates, even folks like Bernie Sanders, who's from Vermont, is spending time in South Carolina just because you realize how valuable how electoral rich some of those states are in terms of the primary. And so you have to put in the time, you have to form the relationships with the local politicians on the ground in those places and get your own volunteers and campaigns on the ground in places like South Carolina. And so you are seeing that. Mayor Pete Buttigieg from South Bend, Indiana, has spent time in South Carolina and other parts of the South. And so I think anyone who has a real campaign strategy is going to be targeting those states and trying to reach out to African-American voters.
Talking to Scott Wong from The Hill, looking at some of the big stories in national politics over the course of this week. Let's turn to these lawsuits now, Scott, from President Trump and family members targeting Deutsche Bank and Capital One, their goal to prevent them from releasing personal financial documents. And that's to counter Democrats in Congress who want those personal financial documents. What kind of stuff are we talking about here? What kind of stuff is at stake?
Well, I think the real vulnerability for the president and his family when it comes to the financial documents is there's been some reporting uncovering the fact that the president and some of his business entities may have fudged some of their numbers in terms of getting financial loans in the past. This would have been before he was president. And so House Democrats, who are investigating every aspect of the president's life and business dealings, they want to get a hold of those business documents, financial documents, bank statements, and find out if that is in fact true. Did the president, which a lot of those allegations would be illegal if you misrepresented yourself, misrepresented your earnings, or misrepresented your financial statements to a bank, that would be illegal and violate federal law. And so Democrats want to get their hands on that. The president and his family have essentially sued the Democrats to prevent them, sort of taking a more proactive approach, prevent them from trying to get their hands on some of those documents.
Part of this came out of Michael Cohen's testimony, right? The president's former personal lawyer, when he was before the House, I think it was, he was saying, yeah, the president and his business would give one number to a bank, a different number to the IRS, maybe a different number to an insurance company. Nobody wants to do anything based solely on Michael Cohen saying a thing, but this is something that they could actually check out and confirm if they got hold of these records. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it would be fairly easy to match up. Now, they are in a separate committee and separate investigation are trying to get their hands on President Trump's tax returns, which the president and, in fact, the IRS is resisting at the moment. The president, as we know, has refused ever since he was a candidate to release his tax returns, while other presidential candidates in 2016 and in this 2020 field have already done so. And so I think, you know, the Democrats have a point. They're asking, what is the president hiding by not releasing his tax returns? What is he hiding in not releasing some of these bank statements? You know, and is he potentially trying to cover up some kind of crime?
Are there other developments in standoffs between Democrats in the House and the president? They're asking for a lot of people to testify, for example. They're looking for various records. What are we seeing in their relationship between House Democrats and the White House on these issues?
I mean, the posture of the president and the White House has been very clear. They have warned people not to cooperate with these House Democrats. House Democrats have issued a number of subpoenas, including to, you know, the former White House counsel, Don McGahn, who did, in fact, cooperate with the Bob Mueller investigation. And so, you know, the two sides, Democrats and the president and the White House, have really taken sort of a warlike posture. They're really digging in for what's going to be a long battle. And, you know, more recently, in more recent days, we have heard Democrats say, well, we are prepared now, you know, if people are resisting our subpoenas, refusing to testify, refusing to hand over documents, we are prepared to fine them. We have the power to fine individuals, and we also have the power to put people in prison, which seems like a pretty extreme case. We haven't quite gotten there, but this is sort of the rhetoric that is being discussed right now in this fight.
And finally, Scott, we had two likely nominees for the Federal Reserve Board coming from the president. The names Herman Cain and Stephen Moore had been floated. Herman Cain, he's out. He's not going to be it. Now, another nominee, conservative pundit Stephen Moore, is getting maybe not rave reviews from Republican senators who would be key to confirming him. What kind of things are you hearing?
Right. Now, in recent weeks, we have seen a number of writings and you know, TV commentary unearthed involving Stephen Moore. He has often been a pundit on TV, somebody who talks about economic issues and things. But he has said things like sexist things like women athletes should not be able to demand equal pay for inferior work, or things like female athletes have no business participating in March Madness, the basketball tournament. That has infuriated a number of Republican senators, including some of the female Republican senators like Joni Ernst of Iowa and Susan Collins of Maine. And so, you know, a lot of these folks have serious reservations about whether Stephen Moore should, in fact, be formally nominated and confirmed by the Senate for this top position, and are raising objections. And so, you know, I think it depends on whether the president wants to expend some political capital to really try to push him through, or if right now, as it looks like, you know, if these four women do band together, they do have the power to basically kill off the nomination before Trump issues a formal nomination for Stephen Moore.
Did I also see that Stephen Moore had referred to Cincinnati as an armpit, which raised the hackles of an Ohio Republican senator who's from, as I understand it, Cincinnati?
You know, I missed that comment. I'm sure, you know, as the days drag on, people are pouring through his writings and all of his various TV appearances. And so I missed that particular comment, but I would not be surprised that the particular senator from Cincinnati might be peeved by that comment.
And briefly, Scott, as we wrap up, what are you watching for in the next week? What's the big story you're waiting for to break?
Well, I think we probably have enough presidential candidates jumping into 2020, although there seem to be more every day. One story we're watching right now is the fact that a lot of top Democratic potential candidates for the Senate seem to be taking a pass. Just a few moments ago, one of the Castro brothers, who serves in the House, decided to pass on a Senate bid in Texas. That was a little bit of a surprise. And so Chuck Schumer is having a real struggle in trying to recruit top-notch candidates that will be needed in order for Democrats to take back the Senate in 2020.
Stacey Abrams in Georgia, too, saying she's not running.
That's
is that right?
That's right.
We'll leave it there for now. Scott, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Okay, thanks so much.
I've been talking to Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. He was with us for a weekly roundup of the top stories in national politics.